Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another week of Talk That Talk with Tweedy and LJ. A cold, frigid Sunday afternoon. I'm sitting here in my hotel in Cleveland. And it's cold as hell outside, snowing everywhere. But anyway, we got some good topics to get to today, a lot going on out there in the sports stratosphere. Before we really even get into anything, I want to hit two things real quick. Byron Scott. I'm getting to the point where I don't really like Byron Scott as a coach. I mean, I think that what he's doing to Julius Randle and D'Angelo Russell, I think it's just overboard. You know, it's like every time you turn around, he got something to say in the media about one of them. And it's rarely positive. It's always something negative. And I just don't think that I don't feel like that's what a coach should be doing, is always having something negative to say about his players in the media. The other thing I want to cover is, yo, if you ain't seen Making a Murder, Tweety, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, people?
Have you seen Making a Murder on Netflix?
Nah, I ain't seen none of that. I ain't got
man.
A Netflix account.
Oh, man. The show is everything. I've been binge watching for the last 2 days when I've been getting done with work. In the afternoon or in the evening time, I've been binge watching. Man, that show is everything. Everything. I got 2 more episodes. I can't wait to be, when this podcast is over, I'm jumping right back into it. Like last night, I wasn't even paying attention to the football game that much last night because I was watching Making the Murder. Anyway, we're going to get right into it today. Of course, NFL playoffs.
Man, I heard you going in on Byron Scott. It's a lot of coaches that call players out in public, man. You don't like that?
Say that one more time. You say it's a lot of players that call coaches out?
Out there public, you know. I mean, call out their players in the media. You don't like when coaches do that?
Well, sure. I mean, I'm well aware that players, that it happens, that coaches in the NBA do it to players. But if you pay attention in the media and read some of these different websites, there's like, it seems like every day, or excuse me, not every day, after every Lakers game, there is a negative quote from Byron Scott in relation to Julius Randle and what's his name, D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, it's no different than if you went to work every day and every time you in work, your boss has got something bad to say about you. Every day. Like, what kind of boss is that? You know what I'm saying? That's what I'm looking at. Like, okay, if you ain't got nothing good to say, then, I mean, I understand sometimes, you know, you feel like you got to criticize players in the media because that's maybe a technique that's used in professional sports as a way to get to players and get your message across to them. But to me, to constantly do it, like, it feels like every game, or 3-4 times a week, how many games? You know, maybe they don't play 4 games a week every week. But, I mean, you get the point. I just think it's overboard and unnecessary, and I personally don't feel like it is – I just don't feel like it's necessary. Sometimes, of course, you know, whatever. That is a way to do it. But, you know, he always got something good to say. And besides, Byron Scott hadn't really – to me, I just don't think Byron Scott's that good of a coach either. I mean, there's a reason the Lakers are that bad. And it's not just simply because they have a terrible roster.
Yeah.
You know, Byron Scott should step in and be like, all right, Kobe, I got it. You retiring. But you out here, you know what I'm saying, second in the NBA and shot attempts for a minute, you ain't going to be able to do it. We just ain't going to be able to do it. You know what I'm saying? But he going to let his commitment to Kobe Bryant retiring run his ass right up out of L.A. because I don't think he's coming back next year. He's not doing. I mean, he's not doing anything for the franchise positively as a coach, in my opinion. Yeah. So I don't think he's coming back next year. Even though, you know, I'm one of those people who don't like to advocate the coaches being fired I'm not advocating for Byron Scott to be fired. I feel like he'll stay through the end of the season because him and Kobe got some sort of relationship. But I don't think the Lakers will bring him back next year. I think they're going to bring in a coach that they think will develop Julius Randle and D'Angelo Russell, and possibly, I mean, you know, the Lakers will probably have a really high draft pick this year. So whoever they decide to pick in this upcoming draft. Anyway, speaking of coaching changes, coaching carousel is alive and well in the NFL right now. I mean, Tom Coughlin resigned in the Giants. There's speculation that he was kind of forced out. Let's see, who else? Chip Kelly got fired before the regular season was even over.
Right.
Who else got fired?
The Dolphins
fired their coach a long time ago, and they had an interim coach, but they didn't bring the interim coach back.
San Francisco.
But I think the head coaches that we named, I don't think any of them were surprising. From what I've seen in the media the last 2 weeks leading up toward the end of the season, I don't think any of those
a lot
were,
of people think that Lovie Smith firing was a surprise.
I didn't mention Lovie Smith. That was my next point.
Oh, okay.
A lot of those were not surprising, but from what I can tell, a lot of people, you know, when I say people, I'm meaning like reporters that deal with the NFL consistently, as far as like inside reporters, guys who normally break news when it comes to the NFL. A lot of those people, as far, and also like NFL analysts on the different networks. A lot of those people were surprised that Lovie Smith was fired by Tampa Bay. Were you surprised that Lovie Smith got fired?
I guess maybe on more on the aspect of had nobody really talk about him losing his job, but hey, I mean, 4-12 is 4-12. I mean, that's what, 2-3 years in a row? I mean,
they weren't 4-12.
What were they this year?
6-10.
Oh, okay, yeah, because they said they was 2-14 last year, and they improved by 4 wins. That's what they were. I would say surprising more because they didn't really give the man an opportunity to get his team in. Man only had 2 years, and I guess, you know, like I said, this year he was starting out with a rookie quarterback, and it was kind of unfair more than surprising. I'm going to say unfair. As far as you know, giving the coach a chance to actually put his imprint on the team, but I mean, I can't blame him. I guess, you know, but at the same time, it was surprising. I think it was surprising to me. They just didn't give a man an opportunity to establish himself. That's all.
I think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers' history over the last the previous two head coaches, you could kind of. I don't think when you look back at the history of the last, like I said, few head coaches, it was that shocking. But I think it's shocking because Raheem Morris was only there for, I believe, 3 years. Greg Schiano was there for 2 years. But
I think the
most shocking part about this was that the Buccaneers improved in the second season. Obviously, like we said, they had a 4-game improvement. I think probably the biggest issue, one of the biggest reasons, is they were 6-6 at one point, and they lost the last 4 games. They looked like they had a shot to make the playoffs, but a collapse late like that in the season can get you fired. Now, the other interesting part to this coaching thing.
You got your own brick.
The other interesting part when it comes to the coaching thing in the NFL is the lack of black head coach. You know, the NFL has the Rooney Rule where you have to, if there's a head coaching vacancy, you have to interview at least one minority candidate.
Yeah.
What do you think about that rule and how it's affecting black coaches' ability to get head coaching jobs in the NFL, positive or negative?
I guess it's a double-edged sword, but I'm leaning more towards at this point in time it's hurting, because at one point in time it was useful to at least put a minority candidate in the office. Now since it's a must, you can have one let's say it's me. I can end up getting not hired, but I can end up getting interviews for maybe four or five different organizations. And those four or five different organizations know good and damn well they're not going to hire me because they have their person in mind. And, like, at the end of the day, if I actually do, let's say I come up the ranks and do get qualified to actually become a head coach, now I got five or six interviews, failed interviews on my resume, and that's not going to look good going forward. That's just like in a regular job for us. You got too many jobs on your application. It's gonna be a little harder for you to get the job that's usually in demand, I guess. Because they're probably looking for somebody who's more of a mainstay. And if you can't even get on anywhere, quote unquote, after five or six interviews, then why should I hire you?
I think I think it's a positive and a negative. The negative part that I saw the negative first. The negative part that I see is guys being interviewed simply because they're black, kind of like we're just saying, they don't have a realistic opportunity to actually get the job. For example, I'm thinking a guy like Deuce Staley. What's the likelihood that Deuce Staley was going to get the job as the Eagles coach? He hadn't been a coordinator. I can't remember off the top of my head how long he's been coaching, but as of late, the last, I'd say 10 years, a lot of the guys who are becoming head coaches are either or have been head coaches before, whether it's on the NFL level, at the collegiate level, or when the season prior to getting hired, they were a coordinator of some type. And that's not everybody, but that's an overwhelming majority of the guys who are getting coaching. So if you're a guy who is a position coach and you get an interview just because you're black, I don't know that it's doing you a disservice, because it's basically a dog and pony show. Hey, we got to interview somebody black. You're not going to get the job, but you got to come and do this interview. So I think that's a negative. The positive, I think, is that if you are a qualified candidate, it at least gives you that platform to be on, to have an opportunity to get the job.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's going to guarantee at least one. I hate to say one. That's not bad. But you got to guarantee somebody gets the platform they put themselves on to be able to say, hey, you know what, I am a qualified candidate, and for you to stand up there or sit down in front of an owner, general manager, whoever is doing the hiring in that particular organization, and articulate your vision for an NFL franchise and how you would build it, structure it, et cetera. So I think there are some positives that come along with the rule. But it doesn't seem like it's having, I would say, the expected outcome outside of, more blacks, more minorities are getting interviewed. But it seems more, it hasn't necessarily affected the head coaching ratio, and it's starting to look more like a dog or pony show. I think where they need to maybe place a little bit more emphasis, as opposed to necessarily focusing on the head coaching job, I think they need to focus more on the coordinator spot. Because I think if you're a coordinator, that is more of a stepping stone. I think you're more likely to get a position as a head coach if you're an offensive or defensive coordinator at the NFL level, as opposed to, hey, I'm Joe quarterback coach, and I'm going to go and be a head coach now. You know, so I think that's what the NFL needs to –
I say,
need to try to angle it towards this coordinator thing.
I say, because if I'm an owner, and like you say, I have to interview a minority candidate, I'm not fit to bring somebody in that's actually qualified if I have who I want to hire in place, because if I turn that person down, knowing that they're a well-respected and well-qualified coach, coordinator, whatever, it'll look bad on me. Whereas if I, like you say, I bring in a Deuce Staley or – hell, I'm just going to throw out a name. Emmitt Smith. or anybody like that, yeah, they might got clout, but all they have been is a player, or maybe at best a position coach. And if I'm an owner and I have to abide by the Rooney Rule, that's who I'm bringing in to do the interview. I'm not bringing in nobody qualified, because now if I don't hire them, I would have to have a reason, a really good reason. So I'm just going to bring in the person, like you say, make it a dog and pony show, and then I'm going to hire who I want to hire, who I wanted to in the first place anyway. So I think it's backfiring on whoever. Like I say, it had good intentions, and it has good intentions. But to me, the Rooney Rule is starting to backfire. It's starting to become a, like you just said, a show. Like just, hey, I interviewed my quota of minority candidates. Now I need to hire who I want to hire. And that's it. I'm not a fan of it anymore.
Moving on, current NFL playoff game going on right now. Vikings taking on Seattle. Vikings up 9-0, looking into the fourth quarter. Two games yesterday, I don't know that we even need to talk about the Texans in Kansas City. I think Brian Hoyer just showed up yesterday and showed you that he was still Brian Hoyer, in case you thought otherwise.
Yeah.
If you thought he was, Brian Hoyer is a capable, more than capable backup quarterback. But I don't think he's a starting quarterback in the NFL. I think he turns the ball over way too much. Obviously, he does have the ability and the skill set to play well for stretches as a starting NFL quarterback. But I don't think you're going to have success over a long, extended period of time with him as your quarterback, starting quarterback. And I think it showed last night. I stopped watching the game. I know he had 5 turnovers, I believe, at the end. At one point, he had 4 turnovers. In the first half, at one point, he had 4 turnovers. Excuse me. In 6 drives, he had 4 turnovers. So that game was at the Pittsburgh-Cincinnati game. Entirely different story. A lot better football game. A lot more competitive. AJ McCarron. Oh, my God, he's going to throw a touchdown. By the way, Seattle just hit a pretty big play there down. It looked like about the 4-yard line of the Vikings. Controversial end to the game. Two things. Number one, the linebacker. Obviously. The guy who made the hit on Antonio Brown last night. Do you think he should be suspended by the NFL?
I thought the hit, a lot of people say he would have got hit. I mean, fine for targeting. If he was an NCAA, he'd have got kicked out the game for targeting. To me, the man, it was a clean hit. I mean, it was just an unfortunate result. I think a lot of these penalties and fines get dished out based on the result of the tackle. Like, they ask you not to lead with the head. He didn't lead with his head. He just so happened to hit Antonio in the head with his shoulder pad. And I honestly don't think that should have been a flag. That's just me personally. Now, the flag afterwards, to me, I think that's what caused the whole the extra 15 with Pac-Man and your boy. Can't think his name right now. You know who I'm talking about, don't you? The linebacker.
Not off top of my head.
He played for the Jets, man. I can't think of Porter. He was out there on the field with them, and they cost Cincinnati another 15 because Pac-Man pushed him. And it was a big thing about should he have been on the field in the first place. I guess that was Cincinnati's gripe. And that in turn put Pittsburgh in field goal range, and they the next play keep field goal on the game. But I guess my question to you is, do you think that or that little sequence of personal fouls, did that hurt them more than the fumble in the red zone by by the running back.
Fumble in the red zone. I'm trying to think of the fumble in the red zone. I don't recall the fumble in the red zone off the top of my head. I think I'm of the belief that games don't necessarily come down to one or two plays. I think those are the plays that get highlighted because they're in the crucial moments. So I don't think games necessarily come down to one or two plays. I think the biggest thing with the Pac-Man incident is that that's something that you can control. That is not – while it is a judgment call by the officials, it is subjective.
Sure, yeah.
That is something that Pac-Man can't control. He can't. He doesn't have anybody but himself to blame. He can call bad refs. He can go on a Twitter rant. He can do all of this. But at the end of the day, if he just controls himself, Pittsburgh doesn't get that 15-yard penalty. That's simple. I mean, that's a no-brainer, in my opinion. The linebacker, I personally think that is a penalty. I do agree that he did not lead with his helmet. He did deliver a blow to the head. The thing that is most alarming to me, not only about that play, but I think this other play happened in the third quarter. The Pittsburgh linebacker, number 50, Giovanni Bernard, caught ball out in the flat, turns around. He may not even take two steps, got blasted. I don't recall if they called the play a fumble or not. Anyways, the two most alarming things about those two plays in particular are that those guys are not tackling with proper fundamentals.
I think that is
a safety issue in the NFL, right? So if he is using proper tackling fundamentals, does he hit Antonio Brown in the head and get a penalty? I'm going to say probably not, because if you tackle a guy correctly – he gets knocked unconscious or whatever the case happened with Antonio Brown, I think that's just, you know, it just comes with football being a physical game. But I personally have a problem. I think he led with his shoulder. That's me. And I think that's the rule, though, right? That's how they want you to – they don't want you to use the crown of your helmet. My understanding is that the other part of the rule is they don't want you lunging at players either.
I think
that he will get suspended and fined, and I think that's mostly going to be related to the fact that he kind of has a history of, if we shall call it, borderline plays, plays that can be considered dirty or, you know, those borderline plays. And I know a lot of people will say, oh, that's taking aggressiveness out of football. Yes and no. I think it is to a certain extent, but I just don't. To me, there's no plays like that. I feel like can be avoided. That's just my personal opinion. I don't think that play that happened to Antonio Brown was an absolute necessity. I think play like that to me can be avoided. The play with Giovanni Bernard and the Pittsburgh linebacker. I do think that Giovanni Bernard is going to get hit hard regardless, because the Pittsburgh linebacker, he made a great read, reacted well, so he's going to get hit hard regardless. But I do think that, a play like that where Giovanni Bernard appeared to possibly, you know, he went to the locker room, he looked like he was laying motionless for a second or two. I think plays like that can be avoided if the linebacker for Pittsburgh tackled properly. He dropped his head. But, you know, that's my personal opinion. And I know that, like, NFL players, a lot of them, especially defenders, think that's cool and it's macho. But what it does is, to me, it hurts football. It's going to hurt football in the long run, because then you'll have people, not just mothers, because people a lot of times blame it on mothers. You even have guys like me, a father. You know, I got three boys. When I see stuff like that, makes me not want my kids to play football. It's not going to encourage my wife to want to change her mind as to whether or not our three boys should play football. So it sounds macho and all that. It looks cool on TV. It breathes well. But I think that kind of stuff needs to be taken out of the game. And these guys, as opposed to trying to deliver the most forceful blow that they possibly can, need to focus more on technique, you know, tackling properly. But it's neither here nor there. Pittsburgh ended up winning like you already said. Another game this afternoon, which I can't figure out for the life of me why in the hell the Redskins and the Packers are the second game. I think the Redskins are going to get destroyed. I didn't even want to watch the game. I probably will watch it. But moving on beyond that, I want to go move back over to the AFC. Talk about this one game. Okay. I mean, not this one game. The Broncos.
One person. It's your boy.
The Broncos.
It's your boy, Peyton. It's your boy.
We got 4 minutes left. I don't want to spend it talking about the Broncos. So last Sunday, the Broncos were struggling a little bit, having turnover issues against San Diego. Sometime in the third quarter, roughly 8-9 minutes left in the third quarter, they bring Peyton Manning in. The Broncos, I think, scored on 4 of their next 5 drives. They go on to win the game, clinch the number one overall seed in the AFC. Subsequently, a few days earlier this week, I think it was Tuesday, Gary Kubiak says Peyton Manning should be the Peyton Manning is the starter for the division around the playoffs. I think it's the division around. You agree with that decision? Do you agree with that decision? Yes or no?
Yeah, and not because Peyton Manning is this great, awesome person at quarterback this year. Because everybody, has, if you got 2 eyes, you've been watching the Broncos. You realize that ain't the case. But I am going to say Brock Osweiler ain't that dude either. So I guess they figure go with the person who pretty much before he got hurt, it wasn't like they was getting smashed. I think only had 1 loss. So they was winning in spite both quarterbacks anyway. So I guess they figured they'd go with Peyton Manning. I don't know. I can't. That's the only reason I can give you, because it can't be performance based. It just can't be.
So here's the thing. I don't know why people say that they did so much better with Peyton Manning than Brock Osweiler. The records were the same. Brock Osweiler also played better teams. He beat the Patriots and he beat the Cincinnati Bengals during that time. And about same. I mean, Peyton Manning threw more passes, but they had the same number of touchdown passes. While Peyton Manning, I think 16, he may have had 17 interceptions. And Brock Osweiler, he had 9 at the most, but I think it was more like 4 or 5. So I disagree. I just can't see a reason why. And I heard Peyton Manning saying, oh, well, you know, when I got in the game, I felt like everybody just ran a little harder, blocked a little harder. Like, what kind of fucking arrogant shit is that? Oh, when I come in, everybody blocks us. Well, why they ain't blocked more than when y'all lost twice?
Hey, you know.
Oh, you don't have no. And then I hear all this bullshit about, oh, well, you know, Peyton Manning is going to be able to get them in the right running play. Come on, man. Their running game ain't been that great all season. Like, what are these? I hear people saying this. I'm like, what the hell? What are you talking about? You know what I mean? Like, I got, you know, they want this. They want this storybook ending for Peyton Manning. The truth of the matter is, in my opinion, if this backup quarterback was not named Peyton Manning, this would never have been a story. Brock Osweiler would have been the starter. He hadn't played great.
That's true. That's anybody that's been a great player over their career. What great player you know going to sit down? They're going to be actually told to sit down. That just don't happen in sports. They'll let that great
player
ride them in the dirt.
But I think Brock Osweiler gives the Broncos a better chance to win because he can make the throws that Peyton Manning cannot make. When they go against a team that has a – who? It doesn't matter. I don't care if his name is Sheep Shit and Hunter Dumpty.
So the Broncos do matter, and that's why he in.
Well,
I'm
saying I don't think Gary Kubiak makes the right decision. I think it's going to end up costing them. The same way Byron Scott, dumbass, is hurting the Lakers by letting Kobe Bryant go out there and shoot the ball like he's 12 years old again. I think that decision to start Peyton is going to backfire on the Broncos. That's all the time we got for this week. Thank y'all for tuning in. Listen to the podcast on BlogTalkRadio.com / Talk That Talk. Peace.